My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with. Like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andrew Rich, and today I'm joined by a returning guest here on the show. He is one of the hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. It's Fred Moreland. And Fred, we've had some technical issues, to say the least, getting this thing started, but here we are, man.
Yeah, if y'all listen at home, you can hear how Andrew's pissed off after spending half an hour with my bullshit trying to get everything working. So sorry, Andrew. Hope everyone's doing well. Thanks for having me on.
It's okay. It's okay. We're getting this thing going here. Now, the last time you were on, Fred, it was the 2022 year-end episode. So it's been quite a while.
Yeah, it has. It has. Like I said, in our first attempt at this before my mic shorted out for the 12th time, we were discussing, I think, some new themes. And most notably to me that I remember is a discussion about the new theme Bray Wyatt debuted with shortly before the end of his career. So
it has been a while for sure in that case. Yeah. But since you were last on here, you now have your own radio show that you're doing. Tell people about that.
Yeah. So I a small, low-powered public radio station that I do volunteer DJing at. You can go to it at radiolex.us. The show is called Marconi's Bad Dream. And I just play an hour of stuff that I like on the English language feed, so you can actually listen to it on demand by going to the show archives. I literally just play pretty much every genre. So just whatever is in my mind of that week, I play, and no one yells at me. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I work in news radio now, but I had a radio music show back in college, and I really miss those days, you know, because, yeah, I played pretty much whatever I wanted, and it was just 3 hours of me alone in this tiny little studio surrounded by entire walls of CDs and LPs. Those were good days, Fred. Those were good days, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing, only I'm middle-aged and, you know, just playing, you know, whatever, I guess, Gen X bait for the most part, I guess, but... Yeah, I play a pretty wide variety of stuff, and I think that the songs I picked for this episode reflects that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, today's episode is called Parejas Increíbles, Incredible Partners or Incredible Pairs, if you don't know your Spanish. And it's a term from Lucha Libre when two rivals team up in a tag match against another team of rivals, typically a Técnico and a Rudo, a face and a heel. And the drama is whether these two rivals can actually put aside their differences for the sake of winning the match. We see this also in American wrestling a lot, which is why I considered calling this episode Can They Coexist? But I think people are kind of sick of that term nowadays, and Parejas Increíbles is much more fun to say, too. So, now, as far as the music goes, we're playing songs that are collaborations between not rivals, but artists of different backgrounds, different genres, different vibes, perhaps, that kind of thing. Because, you know, there are plenty of collaboration songs within the same genre of music. I think rap music is a big example of that. But it's always more interesting, I think, when people you wouldn't expect to come together to make a song actually do, Fred.
Yeah, it produces some unexpected and often much better than you would think results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because on the last episode, I played Common People by William Shatner, Joe Jackson, and Ben Folds. And that's a perfect example of, like, you know, who would ever put these three together, you know? But it works. And oftentimes, these odd pairings combine their unique styles and talents and sensibilities to create some amazing songs. And it's similar in wrestling, I think, to how, you know, styles make fights. How many great wrestling matches have we seen over the years where it's a smaller wrestler versus a big dude, like Darby Allin versus Samoa Joe, for example,
mm-hmm.
or high-flying Will Ospreay versus technical master Zack Sabre Jr.? You know, the cliche is opposites attract, and that's often quite true in both worlds, Fred.
It's very true. In fact, the whole William Shatner, Ben Folds thing, my favorite band growing up was Ben Folds 5. I heard about, like, a fear pop project that Ben Folds did, and it's very experimental and not nearly as good as his other stuff, in my opinion. But that was the start of him doing stuff with William Shatner, and then it just kind of blossomed from there. So, very odd odd pairing that I do think the Common People cover works pretty well.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's get to our picks here. We have 10 each and a playout song at the end as well. Fred, you are the guest. You'll go first. What's your first pick?
My first pick is it's called Standing on the Corner, Blue Yodel Number 9. And it's credited to Jimmy Rogers, the father of country music. But it features an uncredited pair of Louis Armstrong and his wife Lil Hardin Armstrong. So you have quite possibly one of the, well, if not the most celebrated jazz trumpeter of all time, along with his wife, who was no slack on the piano. And it's also kind of the first example of the musician doing a song but not being able to be credited because of contractual obligations to certain labels. So this is a, you know, very early, I think this was 1930 when this came out, but I think it actually still holds up really well today.
I said you'll find my name on the tail of my shirt. I'm a Tennessee hustler and I don't have to wait. Listen all you round us, you better leave my women alone. 'Cause I'll take my special and run all you round the home. Deodorant.
Yes, I think that's a really good look at, like, very early country. I think that Jimmy Rogers stuff largely still holds up today and clearly had a huge influence on, you know, the rest of the genre. You can go on to Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, you know, the giants of the 60s and see their influence or how they're influenced by the work of Rogers. And of course, I mean, the Armstrongs are among the greatest jazz musicians of all time. You know, that's really a genre that I've only dabbled in a little bit, kind of like country, frankly. But, I mean, Armstrong is a fantastic trumpeter, and, you know, the mixture of the two wouldn't really make sense, especially because back in that day, you know, there is a definite attempt by the record companies to market the genres, you know, those two genres, jazz and country, very much on a racial basis. In fact, they refer to musicians by black artists largely as race records at that point in time. And, yeah, I think this is a great example of what happens when you allow multiple genres to, you know, cross over and, you know, come, you get a great result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not my cup of tea, of course, but I certainly have a lot of respect and recognition for all three of these people. It's also the oldest song we've played on the show so far. It's 1930, so it's almost 100 years old at this point. It's pretty amazing. And I will say, it is interesting how you have two guys here who have two really big legacies in their respective genres, you know, with Jimmy Rodgers with country and Louis with jazz. And Jimmy died when he was 33. Louis died when he was 69. Nice.
Nice.
So, yeah, it just goes to show how you can make a pretty big impact in music, regardless of how long you live, Fred, you know?
Yeah. Jimmy, I think, died maybe 2 years after this. Obviously, he died very young in mid-career. Louis, I think, actually had a number one hit with What a Wonderful World, if I'm not mistaken, in the 60s. So he would have been approximately 60 or so at that point in time. Just very interesting just how different careers pan out in the music industry.
Mm-hmm. All right, for my first pick here, I'm going to stay in the country lane a little bit. This is a collaboration album that came out in 2010. It's called The Union, and it's between Elton John and Leon Russell. And I picked a song called Hey Ahab. So I'm a big fan of Elton. I don't know all that much about Leon Russell besides a couple songs, but I love this album. It's produced by T-Bone Burnett. You know, Elton, obviously a pop music icon, not someone you would consider to be you know, a down and dirty kind of guy, especially with those outfits of his at times. But he did dabble in country too. He has that album Tumbleweed Connection. Mm-hmm. Which is like a country western concept album. That's one of his best too, I think. So it's not too crazy that he would collaborate with someone like Leon Russell, but still, it's a fun little mixing of the pop and the, you know, the country Americana worlds here, Fred.
Yeah, Leon was a real multi-genre guy in the first place. So I mean, he did everything from like surf rock to, you know, what we just heard, the kind of country western sound. You know, I really liked his albums, Will-O-The-Wisp and Carney, that came out in the 70s. And I thought this was a great standout song right here. You know, if you go on to Rate Your Music, you know, that's still, that album pool is a 3.36, which, I mean, out there is not bad at all, given it's a very music snobbish site, you know, and someone that uses it, you know, I can't really use that as a bad term. Yeah, and I mean, Elton John, I think, is, you know, at his peak, he was a fantastic musician, had a bunch of great compositions back in the 70s. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road is, of course, I think my favorite. Yeah, he just, throughout most of the 70s, or at least the early part, he was putting out great albums on an annual basis, if not, you know, more than once a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this album, I know it was also towards the end of Leon Russell's life, too. He had a bunch of health problems when he was making it. But this was also, like, his highest charting album in decades. And I think that's a recurring theme of the episode here, which is that, you know, we have an artist getting a chance to reclaim some of that prominence by, you know, linking up with another popular artist. And that's the case here, Fred.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of funny how that became more regular in the past 15 years, really, late career releases for artists seemingly more often would top the charts compared with earlier on where, you know, if you really study in like the 70s and 80s, you know, the charts are much more, not always, but often much more devoted to new artists. So it is an interesting transition, I think, that kind of reflects the differences in the music industry, at least for a little bit in the iTunes era.
Mm-hmm. All right. What's your next pick, Fred?
My next pick is, I dipped into what I thought was kind of the easiest one to do because it's rather prominent. It kind of became its own genre, but, the mixture of rap and metal, produced a lot of stuff for this kind of show concept. And, the one that I decided on featuring was Bring the Noise by Anthrax and Public Enemy.
Bass, how low can you go? Death row? What a brother, no. Once again, back is the incredible rhyme animal, the uncannibal. D. Public Enemy number one, 5 points and threes. And I got numb. Can I tell him never really never had a gun? But it's the wax that's the Terminator X fun. Got it, got me in a cell, cause my records they sell. Cause a brother like me said, well, Farrakhan's a prophet, and I think you ought to listen to what he can say to you. What you ought to do is follow for now. How other people say, make a miracle. D. Pump the lyrical. Black is back, all in, we're gonna win. Check it out.
Yeah, y'all, come on.
Here we go again.
Turn it up.
The brother is madder than mad at the fact that's corrupt like a senator. Soul on the road, but you treat it like soap on a rope, cause the beats and the lies are so dope. Listen for lessons, I'm saying it's our music that the critics are blasting before. They'll never care for the brothers and sisters.
So the obvious pick in this mixture would be Run DMC and Aerosmith with Walk This Way, which was a tremendous success, revitalized Aerosmith's career, and brought Run DMC to the mainstream. But frankly, I think this is a far better song. So I went with, I mean, I just would take Public Enemy over Run DMC. I think they're both great, but I think Public Enemy's better at their peak at this time. And I would prefer Anthrax to Aerosmith. Sorry about the insult to your Boston boys. But yeah, I just think this is a fantastic mixture. One thing I really like in the song, which you featured, fortunately, was the drum break there. I thought that was a really fantastic way to cut between, you know, the two genres musically with the, you know, you have the heavy metal rhythm guitar there for the most part, and then they drop in the drum break with a little bass underneath. And I thought, you know, I think that's a really cool way to kind of reflect that song. And if I recall the story right, basically Anthrax was really big fans of Public Enemy, and this was like in 1990-ish. And they just started doing a cover of Bring the Noise, and Public Enemy found out and they got together and were like, we should just put this out as a single, and they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the first version of Bring the Noise I remember hearing and listening to, because it was in a bunch of WWE video games, and then I heard the original and I was like, what the hell is this? This is all wrong. Where are the guitars? You know, Where's Scott Ian and his crazy beard, you know? But yeah, it's a really good reimagining of the original. It's always interesting when rap and metal mix, because like they share a lot of aggression in terms of what they're trying to bring across there, for sure. And yeah, this is definitely, as you mentioned, it's definitely a successor to Run DMC and Aerosmith doing Walk This Way. It's the next phase of that. You think around this time as well, the soundtrack to the movie Judgment Night, which was all rap metal collaborations. And yeah, as you said, you know, apparently Anthrax had done this song live as a cover. And I think when they approached Public Enemy, Chuck D was like, I don't know about this. But when he heard the final version, he was like, all right, this is legit. And he's right. Yeah.
Yeah. If Chuck D likes it, then, you know, it's good.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I think as well, Anthrax and Public Enemy went on tour together, which is quite the bill. And I think Public Enemy were the openers, and Anthrax was just destroying them on stage every night. And that motivated Public Enemy to like step up their game and go harder. It's kind of like a New Japan Fighting Spirit Chop Fest, you know, like hit me harder. Yeah, yeah. Come on, bring it. So that's pretty cool there too. Yeah.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah. All right. So my next pick here, this is a hard left turn from what we just played. This is Daft Punk from their 2013 album Random Access Memories. And they had a bunch of guest stars on that one. Obviously, you had Pharrell Williams and Nile Rodgers doing Get Lucky. You had Julian Casablancas from The Strokes in a song called Instant Crush, which is great. But I went with a song featuring a pretty prolific singer-songwriter from the 70s, a guy named Paul Williams. So let's hear Daft Punk featuring Paul Williams on a song called Touch.
Touch, I remember touch. Pictures came with touch. A painter in my mind. Tell me what you see. A tourist in a dream. A visitor, it seems. A half-forgotten song. Where do I belong? Tell me what you see. I need something more. Kiss, suddenly alive. Happiness arrive. Hunger like a storm. How do I begin? A room within a room. A door behind a door. Touch, where do you lead? I need something more. Tell me what you see. I need something more.
So I've said before on this show, I love Random Access Memories. So many great songs on there. This one might be my favorite, though. It's over 8 minutes long. It combines disco, jazz, ambient music, an orchestra, a choir, all these different time changes. It's a wild journey. And you've got the great Paul Williams on there, too, who was, again, a very big, you know, singer-songwriter from back in the day. He wrote a lot of big hits, like Rainbow Connection, for starters, and Old Fashioned Love Song as well. And he was also in this movie called Phantom of the Paradise, which was an inspiration for Daft Punk. So it's cool for them to, you know, come together and make this song. And when Daft Punk broke up a few years ago, they put out this video, and the song they used in it was the ending of this song, when the choir goes, "Hold on, if love is the answer, you're home." So there's a lot to this song, and I love every second of it, Fred.
Yeah, it's really key to kind of the whole theme of Random Access Memories, which I think is a masterpiece. I think that Williams is obviously a key part of that. I think his voice is just perfect for what they're doing there at that point in time. And I think, you know, I don't really, like, I'm not going to be driving around to that song or anything, but I think it's really important to an all-time great album.
Mm-hmm. And when this album won the Grammy for Album of the Year, it was Paul Williams who gave the speech on stage. And he had this great line where he goes, "When I was still drinking and using, I used to imagine things that weren't there that were frightening. Then I got sober, and two robots called me and asked me to make an album." And it got a big laugh, because it's a great line. And yeah, he's a wonderful man. He's 84 years old, still with us. So yeah, God love him.
Yeah, still the head of the songwriters union, too, I think.
Yeah, ASCAP, I believe. Yeah, yeah.
Which is wild to think about.
Yeah, yeah. All right, what's your next pick for us there, Fred?
My next pick, kind of playing off of the idea of Bring the Noise, where it's two disparate genres that work well together, I picked Ghetto Smile by Be Legit featuring Daryl Hall.
A young honk in the hood playing chase. Smile on his face, having fun, cause it ain't nothing like this place. And you don't wanna race, fool, I got the new ones up. And we can run from the corner to the new ones home. And after that, we gon' go and raid the plum tree. And stick ball down there where the bums be. Mom's got the door open, bumping Marvin Gaye. Let's get it on all day, every day. At night I pray, Lord, just let me make it. And if I die before I wake, then my soul you take it. Never fake it, my older brother taught me gay. And sometimes even let the young soldier hang. And as a loke, my only duty was to suck and pass it on to my comrades and closest folks. All friends, I knew about it as a child. I stood proud. Have you ever seen the ghetto smile?
In the ghetto there's a smile roaming through the streets. Why don't the homies smile for me?
Ghetto,
yeah. In the ghetto there's a smile roaming through the streets. Why don't the homies smile for me?
Ghetto.
So, obviously that's inspired by Hall & Oates' Sarah Smile, and that's kind of what they're playing off of. It's a very odd to me combination. I wouldn't expect half of Hall & Oates to be able to put together the hook of a really good rap song, but that's what we got here. I honestly don't know too much about B-Legit, just in terms of his career. It looks like he put out several albums, but they were largely, I think, independent releases. But I do know he was on a Tupac album. I think that song works really well, and I think that the interplay between the verses and the chorus really is what sets it apart.
Yeah, there's something so delightful about hearing Daryl Hall say the line, "Why don't homies smile for me?" It's so amusing, I think.
I know, right?
Because I know plenty of Hall & Oates songs, of course, but I never heard of B-Legit before. So he's new to the palette for me. But I did like in the music video, you see B-Legit and Daryl Hall in like this warehouse or whatever, and they're sitting down next to each other, and Daryl is just going full on blue-eyed soul, you know, eyes closed, bobbing his head around, and B-Legit's like, yeah, ghetto smile, B-Legit, Daryl Hall. It's like, what a world, Fred. What a world we got going on.
What here. A gift we got here, frankly. Like, there's no reason this song should exist, but we're very fortunate that it does.
Yeah. It reminds me of when Bone Thugs and Harmony did a song called Home,
mm-hmm.
and they sampled Take Me Home by Phil Collins, and Phil is in the video singing the chorus.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what the hell do these guys talk about, you know, when not shooting the video? It's like,
yeah,
it's just
exactly,
so funny to
yeah.
me, you know? But all right, my next pick here, this is from a movie soundtrack. It's from the Bill Murray movie Scrooged. And it's a duet between an actual pastor and an agnostic Scottish lady. So let's hear the Reverend Al Green and Annie Lennox from Eurythmics doing their version of Put a Little Love in Your Heart. That's just a delightful song. I love it so much. And again, it's a return of sorts for Al Green here, because at this point, you know, Eurythmics are riding high as these, you know, pop rock new wave hitters. But Al Green had spent the last, you know, decade or so doing gospel music and being, again, a shoot pastor. So this was him returning to secular music in a big way for a Christmas movie. So there's still that godly tie-in, I guess. But yeah, I'm a big fan of that song for sure, Fred.
Yeah, it's a great song. I love the original version of it, but I think this was a really nice thing. And it's a little hallmark of what we kind of got from movie soundtracks from the like mid 80s to about 2000, which is just these really unusual pairings of musicians together. And I think that, you know, it's just a gift to be able to get something weird. Like, yeah, let's put Annie Lennox and Al Green together and, let's just have them do a song. Why don't we have them cover, you know, Put a Little Love in Your Heart? Sure. Why not? As they do another line in the executive studio, I can only imagine. but like, yeah, there was a lot of this going on in that time period. And I do think it's a little sad that the movie soundtrack has fallen out of favor just because it really did like put together just the most random acts possible. Like you look at something like Godzilla the movie or 1999 or whichever, whatever term you like to use, the US one that ruined Godzilla apparently. It just had a really bonkers lineup of like people doing original music like Ben Folds 5, Jamiroquai, Rage Against the Machine. I think that also had Kashmir from the very canceled P. Diddy using a Led Zeppelin sample. Or I'm sorry, not Kashmir, but what was the name of that one? Like On My Way or something like that.
It's Kashmir, yeah.
Yeah, it samples Kashmir. It's not called Kashmir, though. The
oh, what was it? Come With Me?
Come With Me, yes. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was kind of dips back into the rap plus rock thing. But I mean, it's just a really unique thing that happened in music for a while there, and it's a little sad it's gone, but I think we still have plenty of featuring spots that are a little out of left field, so we'll be all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking up the rest of the soundtrack, and Buster Poindexter is on it, because David Johansen's in the movie. He's the Ghost of Christmas Past. Mm-hmm. And we could have gotten a trio here of Al Green, Annie Lennox, and Buster Poindexter. It could have happened, Fred. My God.
I mean, if only. If only.
Mm-hmm. But, all right, what you got next, Fred?
All right, my next song is kind of continuing down the same path that I was on with the last one, is unusual mixtures of black and white artists. Everyone has heard this one at this point, I'm positive, but Old Town Road with Lil Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus.
Riding on a tractor, lean all in my bladder. Cheated on my baby, you can go and ask her. My life is a movie, bull riding in boobies. Cowboy hat from Gucci, Wrangler on my booty. Can't nobody tell me nothing. Like a rock star, spend a lot of money on my brand new guitar. Baby's got a habit, diamond rings and Fendi sports bras. Riding down Rodeo in my Maserati sports car. God knows stress, I've been through all that. I'm like a Marlboro man, so I kick on back. Wish I could roll on back to that old town road. I wanna ride till I can't no more. Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road.
So I think we've learned since this became like a out of nowhere hit, that Lil Nas X is a legitimate top shelf talent, puts together a lot of really great songs. And Billy Ray Cyrus is just the right kind of sweaty desperation to attach himself to a product, to a song at that point in time where it was still on the come up. But it does work really well. Honestly, there's about a zillion country stars that I would have preferred to Billy Ray Cyrus for a variety of reasons. But, I mean, it's a great song. You know, it's got a great hook. The little bridge there with Cyrus works well. And, I mean, just the original song is just a great little 2 minute, you know, piece of work. And, you know, I think that we kind of saw something that I'll reference later on in my selections, but we got our first taste of can a black, you know, person be a country star. And, you know, we had the charts, you know, decide, this song isn't country. And it's something that I think we're going to see a little more of as we go forward. And, you know, over the next few years with the rise of black country stars. And but Nas X kind of brought that issue to the forefront for the first time in quite a while, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not every day that you get a country rap song with a gay black rapper that goes to number one on the charts for 19 weeks, which is still the record. It's tied with Shaboozy now. But yeah, it's pretty wild how this very simple song is one of the biggest songs of all time.
Yeah.
And there's all sorts of controversy, as you said, with them taking it off the country songs chart at a certain point, and what makes a country song country, and how does race play a part in all that. It gets muddy, for sure. But yeah, you can't deny that this song is A, really goddamn catchy, because that chorus is a bop, and B,
it is a perfect earworm.
Yeah, and B, it's just it's a monster hit, Fred.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Sold a, or well, I mean, got a zillion streams. I guess you can't say sold a zillion copies, because you know, we're not really doing that these days. But yeah, I'm glad he's still making stuff and doing really good, putting a really good work out there.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget too, the basis of the song, the do. That is a sample of a totally random Nine Inch Nails song
called
34 Ghosts 4 from the Ghosts 1 through 4 album, which is a collection of just ambient music. And I think Lil Nas X bought it for like $30, made the song in one day, and the next thing you know, it's a juggernaut. So I'm pretty sure Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross appreciate the fact that this song is just so massive.
Do they have songwriter credits on it, I wonder?
I believe they do, yeah.
Well, then yeah. I think they'd have a lot of reasons to be happy about it.
Yeah. Well, all right, my next pick here, this is not just a song, it's also an SNL digital short, because it's The Lonely Island, and they're teaming up here with Michael Bolton, of all people. You can find this song on the album Turtleneck and Chain. This song is called Jack Sparrow.
The boys are back. Night starts now, baby, roll with us. Chicken snapping at the neck when we rolling up. Doors ain't no holding up. Black card at the bar like I gives a fuck.
Maybe shit the eye when we walk into the set. Fuck the fellas looking jealous, play the back and get wet. Me down in my waistline, shank in my sock. You either get cut, get stuffed, or get shot.
This is the tale of Captain Jack Sparrow. Pirate so brave on the side.
What?
A mystical quest to the Isle of Tortuga. Raven like sway on the ocean breeze.
Yeah, that was kind of weird, but we're back in the club. Buying up the bar so the groupies show us love. Motherfucking Iceman, I'm the top gunner. Heater on blast, I'm the number one stunner.
Watch your girl, cause I ain't your Mr. Nice Guy. More like the meet you, take you home and fuck you twice, guy. All dressed up with nowhere to run. I know I make you feel crazy.
Now back to the good part. The day he was born, he yearned for adventure.
So, unlike John C. McGinley, I do not celebrate Michael Bolton's entire catalog. Nothing against the guy. I just never dived into his music before. But this is a real bop right here. I mean, Lonely Island and Michael Bolton, it's already a wacky combo.
Yes.
But the fact that the guys are trying to do this, you know, real sexy rap banger, but Michael Bolton keeps steering it towards the Pirates of the Caribbean movies because he just watched them all. And he's also
referenced. It's a great bit.
It is. He also references like Forrest Gump and Aaron Brockovich and Scarface. You know, that Michael Bolton's a real cinephile. Like, so it's really funny, but it's also just a genuinely good, catchy song, Fred.
Yeah, Lonely Island did a lot of that. You know, they had these goofy songs, but they had really good underpinnings, you know, bones to them, really. And I think my favorite example of that is just the whole Bash Brothers experience thing they did for Netflix, I think it was. That was just a complete fever dream, where they did like a 45-minute, basically a visual album about Kosei Canseco and Mark McGuire. with the late 80s, early 90s Ace. It's just a bunch of insane songs, and like, it's just a kind of really weird brilliance to it. I love how Bolton is like 100% committed to the bit on this song, and just like, yeah, I'm doing my thing, but it's like within this really weird prism. And I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, in the video, he's dressing up like Jack Sparrow and Forrest Gump and Aaron Brockovich. He's shooting a machine gun as Tony Montana. And there's a giant mound of cocaine on a desk. He goes for it. That's always the best when, you know, people you wouldn't expect to be involved in this kind of stuff just go full force with it. It's a lot of fun. The one thing I wish, though, is I wish they did include an Office Space reference, you know.
Yeah, can't have everything, though, you know.
Yeah, PC low letter, what the fuck does that mean? Or somebody's got a case of the Mondays, two chicks at the same time. You know, one of those would have worked just fine, I think, Fred.
Could have just slipped in there real good, yeah.
Yeah. But, all right, what's your next pick there, Fred?
My next pick is The Waitress by Atmosphere, which features on guitar and also beatboxing Tom Waits.
A city full of people, and my favorite is that waitress. She treats me like some type of common vagrant. I see her every day, but there's nothing to say unless I decide to step inside of that cafe. I only get to sit if I buy something to eat. Otherwise, it's best to keep my feet moving down that street. And goddamn, she's a hard bitch. She talks at me like I'm the bad dog that got into the garbage. Yeah, I know that the toilet is for customers. You ain't gotta tangle up the strings that make this puppet work. It doesn't have to be a game of patty cake, but it ain't like you don't know I sleep in that alleyway. And by the way, I can see it in your eyes. You're angry with your life, not a stranger to the fight. I bet you hate every man that you date, and you're probably addicted to all types of escape. You take it out on me that you're all alone, when you know you got your own closet full of hollow bones. Watch the tone when you speak to old folks. I'm grown, just trying to get out of this Minnesota cold.
Look, lady, I'm homeless, I'm crazy, I'm so hopeless, I'm suicidal daily.
Yeah, so I really love that Atmosphere album. I think it's when life gives you lemons, paint that shit gold. But this is a song he did from the point of view of a homeless man addressing a waitress who always tries to chase him off from a restaurant he likes to sit in. Tom Waits is an all-time classic bit of a musical weirdo. Just, you know, the music he was doing, Rain Dogs and all this very kind of, mix of like, you know, a little soulful, but really in the kind of country, but not quite, and, you know, kind of rock, but also not quite, and just real genre bending as well. And I thought this was a really great song. I don't think that you really get much of Waits from it, frankly. but I, you know, it's good enough where I'm going to use the excuse to play it.
Yeah, if you never told me that Tom Waits was in this song, I wouldn't know it, because that could be anybody beatboxing, really. Like, we needed some extra raspy beatboxing for it to be clear that it's Tom Waits, you know. Because otherwise, it's just so weird that he's on this song, but I guess Tom Waits is a bit of a strange guy just in general, so it kind of fits in that regard there, Fred, so yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's a great album, a great song for it. Yeah, check out Atmosphere, because I think they're not the best known group, and we really wish they had more, you know, wide notoriety, I guess, or fame.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the subject matter of the song is very Tom Waitsy as well.
Someone down on their luck, kind of little angry at the world, but also an underpinning of like love there. Of some sort.
Yeah, like you said, the song's about this homeless guy who goes into this diner, and the waitress is always mean to him and berates him and treats him like crap. And the twist in the end is, spoiler alert, he's her dad. And that could be a Tom Waits song, too. Like,
yes. You know,
and the homeless man walks into the diner, and he sits down, and the waitress calls him a bum. And he's like, oh, honey, it's me, your pop. Like, that could work, Fred, you know? Come on.
It virtually is. You know, in that sense, it makes a lot of sense. You know, one of my favorite, if you're not a Tom Waits guy, if you haven't listened to him before, one of my favorite songs by him is, looking up the title at this very moment, just to make sure I don't botch it. But yes, Christmas Card from a Hooker in Minneapolis. That is the Tom Waits vibe. I can't really sum it up any better than that.
For sure, for sure. Well, I'm going to keep the low vibes going here. My next pick here, this is a couple of Aussies teaming up. It's Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and Kylie Minogue. And this is off of a Nick Cave album called Murder Ballads. So you know what we're getting here. This song is called Where the Wild Roses Grow.
For my name was Eliza Day.
From the first day I saw her, I knew she was the one. She stared in my eyes and smiled. Her lips were the color of the roses that grew down the river, all bloody and wild.
When he knocked on my door and entered the room, my trembling subsided in his sure embrace. He would be my first man, and with a careful hand, he wiped out the tears that ran down my face.
So Nick Cave wrote that song with Kylie Minogue in mind, which is equal parts cool and also a little creepy too, because the song is a murder ballad. It's based on this story from, I think, the Middle Ages, about a guy who's in love with this girl, Eliza Day, and they get together and then he kills her with a rock. Nice little happy number there. And he sings from the guy's point of view, she sings from the girl's point of view. And it's a pretty haunting song, but it's also really beautiful, too. So there is that nice little balance there with Nick Cave and his, you know, crooning voice. And Kylie Minogue, this, you know, very sweet pop star there. So they make a very interesting team there, Fred, that's for sure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Yeah, I think Minogue was perfect for the part she did on this song. Just the right timber of voice and everything to kind of really fit the vibe that they were going for. I really like that Murder Ballads album. It's a great one from Cave. It's kind of this, '90s weirdo, who went, I mean, obviously recorded in a lot of other decades too. I always associate him with the '90s more than anything else. But yeah, I think it's just an absolute classic. And this is a great example of that album. And I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. And it definitely, I think, helped Kylie in her transition to being a more adult singer, too.
Yeah.
Because at that point, she was mainly known for being this, you know, young bubblegum pop singer. And here is this, you know, dark duet about a murdered woman. And she's in the video as the woman, like she's floating in a pond or whatever. And there's a big difference between that and the Locomotion. That's for sure.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. But I think it really fit her range well.
Definitely, definitely. All right, what you got next there, Fred?
My next pick is from two absolute titans of music. It's Say, Say, Say by Paul McCartney featuring Michael Jackson.
Say, say, say what you want.
Standing in my place and fighting, you know I'm crying. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Yeah, so this was a crossover that would come back to bite Sir Paul in the butt. But basically, you know, they decided to merge two of the biggest musicians of all time. This was at the peak of Michael Jackson's powers. Paul was still doing pretty okay in the 80s, but had obviously lost his fastball to some extent from the his earlier days. And, you know, they did two songs together. This one, The Good One. And I think the other one, is it The Girl Is Mine?
Girl Is Mine on Thriller, yep.
Yeah, which yep. Was Michael Jackson featuring Paul McCartney. Paul won the battle there for, you know, main credit on the better song. Michael Jackson arguing with Paul McCartney about who the lady is dating is not very convincing for a variety of reasons. but like, you know, this set, this has like the great drum line, or I'm sorry, bass line you would expect from a Jackson song of this period. The two voices play well together. I think it's really a great duet from basically really two generations of pop star.
Yeah, it's Paul McCartney and the guy who bought the Beatles catalog.
Yes, and that is why it was bad for Paul. Because yeah. I think while they were doing the music video, if I recall the story right, basically Paul was trying to give Michael Jackson advice and was like, hey, if you really want to make money in the music business, you need to buy publishing rights to songs. And little did he know that within a year, Michael Jackson would buy the publishing rights to the Beatles songs.
Whoops. Yeah, but yeah, I've said before I'm a big Paul McCartney guy, despite the fact that he's rarely ever cool. Like, he's a total cheese ball, and this, I think, is you know, pure 80s McCartney cheese. And I did get mixed reviews, but it's still a big hit, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously, having Michael Jackson on there doesn't hurt, because Thriller is still very fresh, and Jackson is just a supernova at that point. But, you know, and McCartney's McCartney too, but... You know, MJ is the guy at that point, capital T, capital G. And when you can say that over a Beatle, that's pretty impressive, Fred, for sure.
Yeah, Jackson in the 80s was wild, just in terms of the popularity level that he was able to attain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you could have picked The Girl Is Mine. You could have also picked the other duet that McCartney did around this time, Ebony and Ivory with Stevie Wonder. Which is also, you know, a little bit of a mixed bag, I guess you might say.
It's a little cheesy, but I think it's also, like, fairly good. But I think this is the best of that era of his duets.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right, I'm going to stay in the 80s with this one here, 1987. This is the Pet Shop Boys. They put out an album called Actually. And this song, they teamed up with a legendary singer, Dusty Springfield, who had fallen on hard times at this point, but they're bringing her back. This is What Have I Done to Deserve This?
How am I gonna get through? How am I gonna get through? I come here looking for money. Got to have it. And end up leaving with love. Oh, now you left me with nothing. Can't take it. How am I gonna get through? How am I gonna get through?
I bought you drinks, I brought you flowers, I read your books and talked for hours. Every day, so many drinks, such pretty flowers. So tell me, what have I done to deserve this? What have I done to deserve this? What have I?
Since you went away.
Such a good song, man. Such a great blend of vocals and the synth pop in there. Really, real classic song. And we talked about, you know, artists coming back to prominence with these collaborations. This is like Exhibit A with Dusty Springfield here, because she had not had a hit in a long time. I think like 15, 16 years. And she also had drinking problems and drug problems, and she was self-harming too, and all this stuff, and then she does this song, and it basically revives her career. So yeah, it just goes to show that it's not over till it's over. You know, comebacks are possible, Fred, for sure.
Yeah, Dusty was one of the most talented singers of her era, and I'm glad she was able to get the second stretch of fame and success. But if you go back to her 60s stuff, like there's some absolute like high level music she was making back then. I mean, Son of a Preacher Man is one of the best songs ever, but I mean, other songs that she did in that time period, and she had several, I think Dusty Does Memphis or something along those lines.
Dusty in Memphis.
In Memphis, yeah. Yes, does. Probably would not have been used at that time period. or any. phrasing is important. But, yeah, I mean, that's an all-time great album. And, you know, I've always held her in high esteem, and I'm glad she was able to get another kind of bite of the apple there late in the career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe the story goes, they were trying to find someone to do the song with here, and the record company was like, well, how about Barbara Streisand? How about Tina Turner? And those would have been fine, of course. But Neil Tennant, God bless him, was like, I want Dusty Springfield. And they actually collaborated again on her next solo album. So it is nice to, you know, see someone, you know, who had reached a real low point, be able to, you know, get back up and get that pat on the shoulder and deliver for sure for him.
Yeah, yeah. It's always nice to have someone featured with that kind of talent, too.
Definitely. All right, what's your next pick there, Fred?
My next pick is Seven Spanish Angels by Ray Charles with Willie Nelson.
When the battle stopped and the smoke cleared, there was thunder from the throne. And seven Spanish angels took another angel home.
There were seven Spanish angels at the altar of the sun. They were praying for the lovers in the valley of the gun. When the battle stopped and the smoke cleared, there was thunder from the throne. Seven Spanish angels took another angel home. All right, y'all, help me now.
There were seven Spanish angels
at the altar
of the sun.
Oh, I believe
they were praying for the lovers.
Yeah, they was.
In the valley of the gun.
Well.
When the battle stopped and smoke cleared, there was
Yeah, so as I realized just kind of how country heavy I went with my list more than my typical taste. But yeah, so this one is kind of a cheat because people typically associate Ray Charles with the kind of blues/soul music that he did along the lines of What I'd Say and Hit the Road Jack and so on and so forth. But he also did a lot of country western back in the late 50s. Specifically, he did an album called, I think it was Ray Charles Sings the Country Western Classics or something along those lines.
Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music.
Yes, thank you. It has a red cover. It has him with the piano in front of him. And I mean, it's a classic album. It's one of the best ever recorded. And, you know, so this features that kind of side of his music that's easily overlooked, I feel like, but also pairs him with another legend in Willie Nelson. And what they had, I think, was a really great, truly collaborative kind of song. They played well together. They put together a great track with it. And I think it's one of the cooler duets of its period.
Yeah, this is the third episode in a row we've had Willie Nelson on the show. So it's Willie Mania, baby, running wild. But yeah, it's a fine country song. It's about an outlaw and his lover who are gunned down by a posse. It's as country as it get, really.
Yes.
And I guess the story goes, the guys who wrote it based it on the works of Marty Robbins.
Makes sense.
But Marty Robbins was dead at this point, so they took it to Willie Nelson. But then the producer of Ray's album heard the song and was like, I want Ray to sing this. So they decided, you know what, let's make it a duet. And it all just, you know, came together like that, Fred.
It worked out really well.
Yeah. All right, so let's get away from the country for a little bit here with a European team up. This is Sir Tom Jones of Wales doing a collaboration with the Cardigans from Sweden. And this is from Tom's album called Reload, where he has a bunch of guest artists on it with him. And this is them doing a cover of Talking Heads' Burning Down the House.
Fighting fire with fire.
So yeah, it's a fun combo. You know, you got Tom Jones, who is just this really fiery, soulful guy, that bombastic voice of his, all that energy. And then you have the Cardigans and Anita Person, the singer there, who is much more cool and collected. And you also have the horns with the rock music mixed in there, too. It's a really good cover. And it did help, too, you know, keep Tom Jones relevant going into the new millennium with the younger audience there, too. So, yeah, just a real fun cover there, Fred.
Yeah, I think that's a blast. I think it does a great job capturing kind of the spirit of the Talking Heads as well. Talking Heads is one of my all-time favorite acts. I think pretty much everything they put out in the 80s was amazing. They have one of the best live albums and the absolute best concert film ever with Stop Making Sense. And, you know, this is, of course, one of their highlight songs. And to really kind of take it and twist it in a way that combines the sensibilities of both the Cardigans and Tom Jones, but also incorporate some kind of standout but unique musical cues underneath, I think is really impressive creativity that they put together in this arrangement. And I think that that's, that makes this a really great cover and a really great performance by both acts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's weird, you know, this album, it was never sold in the U.S., but it's still Tom Jones' biggest-selling album, funny enough. But I looked up who else was on the album with him. Portishead is on this album.
What a combo.
Yeah, Stereophonics, Robbie Williams, the Monkey Man himself, Bare Naked Ladies, Pretenders, Van Morrison, Natalie Imbruglia. It's a real who's who of names there, Fred.
Yeah, and I'm going to use this as an opportunity to talk about Monkey Man, Robin Williams. It is very funny to hear, like, people from the other side of the Atlantic be like, how can the Americans not be into Robin Williams? How could he have not had any success there? When I heard that they were doing that Monkey Man biopic about him, I went to his discography page on Wikipedia and looked it up. And under his singles section, he doesn't even have, you know, they'll list, like, you know, different countries and so that they can show the peak for these different songs. He doesn't even have a column for the U.S., let alone, like, you know, entries showing that they never charted here. Like, they just were like, the editors of Wikipedia were just like, he was never popular in the U.S. It's a very bizarre decision to make that movie, but I digress. Yeah, I love this. Tom Jones is just belting through this whole song, and I think it's a great vocal performance in particular.
Mm-hmm. We should clarify, of course, it's called Better Man, not Monkey Man.
It should be, but you know.
It should be Monkey Man. I agree. It should be Monkey Man, unfortunately. But all right, Fred, what's your next pick?
My next pick is a very recent one to kind of counteract picking the earliest song ever on this show. I went with Two Most Wanted by Beyonce and Miley Cyrus.
No jump in the gun, but we're both still young. One day we won't be.
Didn't know what I want till I saw your face. Say goodbye to the old me.
Came out of nowhere, didn't give no warning.
Pedal so heavy like a two most wanted. And I
don't know what you're doing tonight, but I'll be your shotgun right up till the day I die. Smoke out the window, flying down the 405. I'll be your backseat, baby, driving you crazy anytime you like. Whoa, I'll be your shotgun rider till the day I die.
Yeah, so fantastic vocal performances by both. Great mingling of the voices, I think. They work really well together. And, this was, of course, the Cowboy Carter album, which was Beyonce's attempt at a full-fledged country album. I think it had more successes than failures on it, but I also think it's not exactly Lemonade that we're talking about here in terms of overall quality. That said, I think this was a great song. One of my favorite songs come out in 2024, and I really enjoyed it. Enjoyed the kind of instrumentation you have with the twangy guitar, but the strings underneath as well. And I think altogether it was a great song.
Fred, I will be your shotgun rider till the day I die, and your backseat baby, too. I don't mind, sir. I don't mind.
Glad to hear it.
Yes. It's so funny how we have two examples on this episode of a black artist venturing into country with a member of the Cyrus family.
Yes.
And there's controversy. It's crazy that happens. I don't normally listen to Beyonce or Miley Cyrus on the reg. They're not my wheelhouse, but obviously Cowboy Carter was a huge deal, and it just won the Grammy for Album of the Year. But I actually hadn't heard this song until a few days ago, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, this is pretty darn good. These ladies have a real bright future ahead of them in the music biz.
The Andrew Rich PDG endorsement.
I gave him the seal of approval. I know this had similar controversy to Lil Nas X with the CMAs not, you know, giving Beyonce any nominations, but she got the last laugh in the end, I think, there, Fred. So good.
Yeah, I think it's fair to chalk up the Grammy win as a make good for her not getting it for really her magnum opuses earlier in her career, which just happened to like come up against like Taylor Swift magnum opuses. But it's a really good album, I think. I think it does well. It does what it's trying to do really well, I should say. And I think that it's a great, in general, a really great album.
Mm-hmm. Also, I'm always taken aback just how like deep and husky Miley Cyrus's voice is.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my mind, she's still like Hannah Montana, like she's still like right. A teen pop star. But then you hear her, she sounds like Scarlett Johansson, like just got that that deep voice of hers. It's wild. But I can't knock the talent. That's for sure. So
that's right.
My next pick here, this is from 2017. This is one of my favorite artists, Gorillaz, and they have a lot of collaborations in their catalog here. This is two very different people. This is Mavis Staples of the Staples Singers and Pusha T of the T family, I suppose. I don't know, but this is a song called Let Me Out.
Look into my eyes, mama, tell me what you see. Tell me there's a chance for me to make it out the streets. Tell me that I won't die at the hands of the police. Promise me I won't outlive my nephew and my niece. Promise me my pastor isn't lying as he preach. Tell me that they'll listen if it's lessons that I teach. Tell me there's a heaven in the sky where there is peace. But until then, I keep my peace in arms reach.
Am I passing to the light?
Am I looking at your
all the world is out of your hands.
Something out the country fair is about to change its fall. Yeah, 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 it's a shift in times, but I won't get tired at all.
Am I passing to the light?
Am I looking into my soul?
All the world is out of your hands.
So yeah, I could have picked 50 Gorillaz songs because, Damon Albarn, he's worked with everyone pretty much, you know, Elton John, De La Soul, Bad Bunny, Stevie Nicks, all the stars are here. But I picked this one just because I love the atmosphere. I love the mood, how ominous it sounds with the whispering, let me out, the background singers. And of course, Mavis Staples, who is a legend. And she's still with us too, 85 years old. And I really just like this song there, Fred. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good combination of all these different acts. And I think that's persistently one of the most impressive things to come out of the whole Gorillaz experiment is getting all these different, different acts together to produce really good music that is often counter genre to what they're best known for. And one of my favorites from Gorillaz is Dare, and just getting, the Happy Mondays guy there with his heavy accent on it just to contribute, I think was great, creation.
It's dead. Yeah. Yeah, that was good. That's
the good. Staples is one of the best singers of all time. If you haven't checked out her earlier work from the 60s, a lot of it's gospel influence or just outright gospel. But, I mean, just a absolutely pure voice.
Yeah, I was thinking of picking another song by hers for this episode. She did a live cover of Talking Heads, the other again, Slippery People, with some of the people from Arcade Fire. That's really, really good. From a few years ago, but yeah, good on Mavis for still being here with us, for sure.
Congratulations to Mavis Staples on not dying.
Yeah, it's a big achievement for sure. But all right, Fred, what is your second to last pick for us?
Yeah, my penultimate pick is "When Love Comes to Town" by U2 and featuring B.B. King. Yeah, so you got a combination here of B.B. King, legitimately one of the greatest musicians of all time, and the absolute king of the blues, along with U2, who was essentially, if not at the absolute peak of their powers in the 80s, very close to it. This was 89, I believe, off the album Rattle and Hum, and shortly after. I think that was the one after Joshua Tree, if I am putting those in order correctly.
Correct.
And I mean, it's great. You know, B.B. King is still very capable at this point in time, despite his relatively advanced age. And, you know, U2, I mean, Bono has always been a great vocalist. And, you know, they are laying out very nicely to feature the B.B. King guitar solos, which are absolutely on point. You know, and just, you know, this was actually put together because they toured together in support of Rattle and Hum. And B.B. King and his band were the opening act on those concerts, and then after U2 played, they'd do an encore where the two groups play together, and this was part of it. And I just love the song. I think it really held up well, 35 years later. And there's, you know, a great little archive, I guess, of what these two groups were like together, and what they were like together, and what they were doing separately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a real nostalgia kick for me because this was Takashi Sugura's theme song in Noah for many years, and he stopped using it, sadly, and I miss it a lot. So I appreciate you playing this one here, Fred, for sure.
Happy to help out.
Yeah, but besides that, yeah, this song is great. I mean, if you're someone like U2 who's trying to pull off that Americana blues roots rock vibe at this time, and you need someone to help give you some of that legitimacy, B.B. King's not a bad choice. You know, his name is literally King, and he's the king of the blues. Like, he's your man. And, yeah, he's a very strong guitar player and a very strong singer, too. I mean, I know Bono has quite the set of pipes on him, but you hear B.B. King just, you know, belt out this song. He holds his own for sure, Fred, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's got a completely different tenor, too, so they work well together. You know, you kind of get kind of the lower rumble of King with the more baritone, I reckon, Bono, and it's a great combination.
Mm-hmm. I think you could have picked another U2 song, which was The Wanderer, which is U2 with Johnny Cash, and
yes.
Johnny sings the whole song instead of Bono. That's also a great song, yeah.
Another strong pick.
Mm-hmm. All right, so my second to last pick here, this is another song from a movie, and it's actually a James Bond theme. It's from 2008's Quantum of Solace, which was the second Daniel Craig Bond movie. And this is Jack White and Alicia Keys together for a song called Another Way to Die. So I've played Jack White a bunch on this show in the past few months here, and he hasn't let me down yet. Now, this song gets a bit of a bad rap. I think what hurts it is the actual movie it's part of is not that good.
No, it's a bad movie.
Yeah, it's not the best Bond movie, that's for sure. Also, it's coming in between You Know My Name and Skyfall, which are two of the best Bond themes ever, in my opinion. And it's different than a typical Bond theme. You know, it's the first duet. It's much more rock-oriented, more Jack White, you know, bluesy, herky-jerky kind of thing. Not that cinematic, really, not as sophisticated. But I love the guitar riff, that Alicia Keys sounds great, too. And it did take a few listens for me to, like, warm up to the song, but I came around, and I dig this one quite a bit, Fred.
Yeah, it's a really great song. It's better than, you know, the circumstances of it, you know, probably should have allowed it to be, you know, because it reeks of, like, studio exec, like, hey, let's slap these two unrelated groups together and try to shake a hit out of it. But, I mean, the riff is fantastic. Alicia Keys, her vocals really carry it, I think, on that end. Jack White's always been a fine vocalist, but not like, you know, not exactly one you'd send to space as like, this is an example of great singing, right? But I think the structure of the song is really great, and I think it's one of the better Bond themes, frankly. I think it's a little underrated. Like you said, it being paired with a really muddy Quantum of Solace film that just kind of is nonsense. Hurts it, I think, the way it's looked at, but I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the rumor is originally it was supposed to be Amy Winehouse doing the theme for this movie, and I think Leona Lewis as well was also one of the potential people, which would have been cool, but I think it is, I think, a bit novel to see, like, you know, Jack White, weirdo extraordinaire, being given a Bond theme, you know? So
yeah,
I do like that. Yeah, because Chris Cornell, also a rock guy, but he's, you know, I think a lot more straightforward than Jack White, who has his fair share of eccentricities, Fred.
Yeah, Jack White, very interesting guy. I feel like he kind of snuck in through the back door to get on that that song, but I'm glad he did.
Mm-hmm. All right, Fred, what is your last pick of the day?
My last pick is one I could probably talk to you about for half an hour. It's Justified and Ancient by KLF and Tammy Wynette.
Going to do, better not stop them 'cause they're coming through.
Right, so KLF is genuinely one of the most fascinating music groups of all time, in my opinion. They're a duo from England in the late 80s that were, that got together and mainly did, like, electronic music. And they really kind of helped create some subgenres within that. But they also, they did a one-hit wonder, The Awful Doctor and the TARDIS, while simultaneously writing a book called How to Have a Number One Hit the or a Number One the Easy Way. It was an entire mockery of the pop music establishment, and it clearly worked since it got to number one for exactly 1 week in the UK. It was a song that featured samples from Doctor Who, as well as Gary Glitter's Rock and Roll Part 1, or 2, whichever it is, and a third song I'm forgetting right now. They went on to put out some releases featuring samples from ABBA and the Beatles that were not cleared, which led to legal issues. They threw a dead lamb on stage at the big the Brit Awards, I think it was. Then shot fake Tommy guns into the audience. They infamously decided to stop doing pop music because they thought it sucked. And they did so by creating a film called The KLF Burns a Million Quid, which, yes, they took £1 million and just burnt it on film. And then deleted their entire catalog, from, you know, being for sale. Absolute weirdos, absolute bizarre people, and utterly fascinating. If you want to lose a good half hour to an hour, like, at a minimum, like, just read their Wikipedia page and check out all their different side projects and everything. Because for, like, a 5 or 6 year period, they were absolutely prolific and just completely unique, I think, within the realm of pop music.
Yeah, this song is a real mind trip. I still don't know what the hell's going on here.
No, it's wild. It's wild. You've got Tammy Wynette, a country legend, over top of, like, a big house beat. And then you've got this really, like, dated at this point in time, rapping over top of it. That guy, I forget his name. I could look it up real quick, but I'm not going to. He did a lot of that kind of rapping over, like, house beats for that time period. And it is just an absolutely bizarre song.
Yeah, Tammy Wynette, Ice Cream Van, Moo Moo Land, what the hell is all this?
And yes.
Yeah, reading up on the KLF, there is just so much lore and backstory that I don't know. But I'll tell you what I do know, this song is quite the banger. It is a real good. Catchy good time.
It shouldn't work at all, and that's kind of the KLF thing, is they were just doing really weird stuff that probably shouldn't work on any level. And instead they made a bunch of money, and then they burnt half of it, or most of it that they had. At that time period, and just were like, you know, absolute weirdos. That's the only thing I can say. I can only say it over and over because it's just the absolute truth, is that they're just really weird.
And the video is even more bonkers because it takes place on this, like, ancient pyramid set with Tammy Wynette dressed like a queen, and you have, like, African tribal drummers and dancers and people wearing these cult robes and an ice cream van. Again, it's so crazy, but then again, if you're the kind of band that, you know, deletes your entire back catalog and burns £1 million, it's, you know, it's par for the course, I guess, there.
Yeah, yeah, it's all, like, it's all within their vibe. Their vibe is not normal, but it all fits together within their thing. Like, they're very inspired by the Illuminatus novel trilogy, I think it was, which I've never read. It's just, like, all these weird things that they put together. And one of the reasons they left music, I read, is because after this success they had with the Tammy Wynette on vocals, they started getting calls from other, like, aged music acts. They were desperate for success. I think Sweet was, or maybe, I think it was Sweet and not Squeeze. It was Sweet. Sweet called them up and was like, oh, can you do something for us? And, like, a couple other fairly prominent musicians that had faded from their peak were similarly, like, trying to glom onto them so they could have a number one hit, or I think this only hit number two, but behind the re-release of Bohemian Rhapsody in the early 90s in the UK. And they were just like, we don't want to do this. We're out of here.
Well, my last pick here, this is from a TV special way back in 1977. It's Bing Crosby's Merry Old Christmas, which was filmed a month before Bing Crosby died. And at one point in the show, the doorbell rings, and who's that at the door? Why, it's David Bowie. And they mingle for a little bit, and Then they stand around the piano and they sing a duet of two songs combined. So let's hear David Bowie and Bing Crosby sing Peace on Earth / Little Drummer Boy.
Come, they told me, ba-rum-ba-bum-bum, a newborn king to see, ba-rum-ba-bum-bum. Our finest gifts we bring, ba-rum-ba-bum-bum, rum-ba-bum-bum, rum-ba-bum-bum. Peace on earth, can it be? And years from now, perhaps we'll see. Our see the day of glory. See the day when men of goodwill live in peace, live in peace again.
Yeah, that's just a fascinating duo right there. I mean, two people who just seem on two different planes of existence, because you've got Bing Crosby, who is, you know, as old school crooner as you get, and you have late 70s, you know, freshly sober off a massive cocaine binge, Berlin era David Bowie. It is such a clash, and yet this is a wonderful song. They pair
really
so well.
Well
together. You know, with David going high and Bing going low. And apparently this almost didn't happen because Bowie didn't want to sing Little Drummer Boy. He didn't like that song. So the music supervisors were like, what do we do? They find a piano backstage and they just write this song, Peace on Earth, in like an hour. And they give it to Bowie and he's like, yeah, this is good. And it all works out for the better. So yeah, it's a strange combo, but it works so well.
Yeah, it's a very solid song, I think, because that was, like you said, they completely created that song just for that special on absolute short notice. And I think it actually works well. I think it's a great arrangement. I hope you've seen it, but there's a send-up of this because it got very popular online. It's like about 15 years ago. It was like, let's gawk at this weird, you know, artifact from the 70s. Kind of thing. And basically Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly recreated it in one of the all-time great bits. Played it completely straight and just acted like they were... I think it was Ferrell as Bowie and Reilly as Bing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And they just played it completely straight and like they hated each other's guts. Which, I don't know how much truth there is in it, but it wouldn't exactly shock me, because what can you imagine those two talking about? And I think that it's really actually a good song, but you have to kind of get it divorced from its context, because its context is those old school kind of Christmas specials that were just schlock specials, just like completely schlocky. It's a miracle that Paul McCartney didn't do like 14 of them, because it would have been right up his alley, just because the kind of cheese that was. But I mean, like, Bob Hope.
Different guy.
Did like a zillion of these, which were all extremely like dated humor and extremely middle of the road. And if you try to watch them now, like, they do not hold up at all. But they're just these weird little snippets of American culture and all these things, and they're fascinating that way. And this is kind of a byproduct of that. But like, just the setup of like David Bowie just like hitting a doorbell and just being like, "Oh, hello," and like they don't know each other, and it's just incredibly bad acting.
it's a narrative. There's a narrative going on here. It's not just being like, "Here's my guest, David Bowie." Like, no, yeah, Bowie shows up at the house. They talk a little bit, you know, are you the butler, you know, and at one point, I think Bing asks him, like, do you like any of the older guys? And Bowie goes, yeah, I like John Lennon, which is so funny because, again, it's, you know, it's 1977.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was still going to release music.
He's still alive. Lennon's still alive at that point. So, you know, but yeah, it's so funny. And just that whole segment, it's like you said, it's a strange time capsule of that era.
Yes.
But it did give us a damn fine duet in the end. So good on them. Yeah. But
yeah, like it's not exactly the Voyager Gold record, you know. No one's going to be you know, this is how we preserve human culture. Yeah. But like, if you stumble upon this as an archaeologist, like hundreds of years in the future, you're going to be like, what the hell, man?
Still not as bonkers as Bowie and Mick Jagger doing Dancing in the Street in that whole video.
Oh, man, so, my wife made me play that earlier today for this exact reason. Because she was like, oh, yeah, you got to play Bowie and Jagger now. Which reminds me of the guy who took out the music for that video they did together and then put in his own sounds, trying to imagine what it was like, you know, filming that.
Or when a Family Guy played the entire music video from start to finish, and then it just cuts to Peter Griffin going, that happened, and we let it happen. So,
yeah
good good stuff for sure. But all right, those were our picks. That was the episode, and I gotta say, Fred, we make an incredible pair. Incredibly awesome, that is.
Hey!
So, thank you for being here, man. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate you putting up with my technical issues, with my cursed laptop and everything else. but I had a great time. I always enjoy talking with you. Have you been listening to any good music outside of just, like, you know, what we just discussed?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying my best to keep up with new releases as they come out, because I mentioned a few episodes ago that I'm really bad at, you know, keeping up with new albums as they come out, and I always end up just, you know, cramming them all at the end of the year, pretty much. So I'm trying my best to, you know, keep up with stuff, and I just listened today to the new album by Kim Wilde, the
nice
pop star who did that song Kids in America back in the day, and that's a pretty good album. I also listened to the new album by Matt Berry, the actor.
Oh, cool.
Which is also pretty good. But yeah, you know, again, I'm trying my best to keep up with all these, you know, hip new acts of this day and age, Fred. So there you go.
Asking what their top 40 hits, like your Joe Lanza.
Yeah.
I just started listening to FKA Twigs' new album, Eusexua, or however you want to pronounce that. It's the L off Sexual, which is really messing with me. But it's a really nice electronic kind of album. It's not really my key genres or anything, but I think she's a great singer, and I love listening to her stuff, so I'm going to have to finish checking it out. And other than that, on my end, I've mainly been digging through this book Rolling Stone put out in, like, 81 of, like, album reviews. So I've been digging through that for, like, little hidden gems to look up, and just got a new version of it because, or a new copy, I should say, because the cover was falling off the first one it had, so.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, any plugs you want to give, Fred? Go right ahead.
Sure, I mentioned the radio show. You can check it out if you want to. Radiolex.us, Marconi's Bad Dream is the show on there. You can also listen to my AEW-centric wrestling podcast, The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. Which comes out ostensibly on a weekly basis here on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network, though, you know, events will occur. I just put out, actually, what I'm very proud of is a 5-hour episode I did, the Great 2025 Wrestling Primer, with a bunch of different people, mainly from the VOW orbit, talking about 15 different promotions that aren't AEW, and kind of trying to take a look at what their 2025s will look like, and just a brief recap of their 2024s. And I think it went really well, and I'm very proud of that. So if you're thinking about picking up a new promotion or two this year, check that out, and that may help you.
All right, well, Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network for all of the shows, my show, Fred's show, all the shows there. Voices of Wrestling, of course, yes. Voices of Wrestling.com, Blue Sky at Music of the Mat, at Just Andrew on Blue Sky there. If you want to leave a comment about this episode or share your picks, Voices of Wrestling.com/Discord. That's also where I post the Spotify playlist for each episode. And, you know, make sure you subscribe as always on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice, and leave a nice rating and review. All right, the playout song for today. This is a live song from 2016. It's never been officially released, only on fan cams. This is David Gilmour from Pink Floyd. He was doing a show at the Royal Albert Hall, and he was playing Comfortably Numb. And on the Pink Floyd version, it's Roger Waters who sings the part of the Doctor. But in this case, it's Benedict Cumberbatch. So let's go out with David Gilmour and Doctor Strange, Sherlock Holmes, doing Comfortably Numb. Thanks again, Fred.
Thank you, Andrew.
Come on now, I hear feeling down. Well, I can ease your pain, get on your feet again. Relax, relax. I need some information first. Just the basic facts. Can you show me where it hurts?
Music of the Mat is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.